From the land of Grand Theft University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 22nd day of August, 2014, a Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. And we'll look at the agricultural cash grain markets with Ben Pruce at the Anderson's Everly, Iowa facility. And along the way, we'll get an update of the agricultural news. Guess what? U.S. EPA has finally put forth a set of volumes for the RFS, although they went to the Office of Management and Budget for review and have yet to be released. We'll hear more about that for the afternoon, and we'll take a look at what the Iowa number came out like, as well as Minnesota, from the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour as we make our way through this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
And checking now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for a Friday afternoon. September soft red winter wheat today at $5.52, up 5 3/4. July futures at $5.96, 6 3/4 higher on its settlement price. Corn futures 3 1/4 cents higher in the lead option September. A settlement $3.65 1/2. December $3.71 1/2, up 2 1/2 in the March. 3.84 1/4, 2 1/2 cents higher. The May at $3.92, 2 1/4 higher. July at $3.98 1/2, up to, and December of next year at $4.11 1/4, 1 1/2 cents higher. September soybeans $11.66, up 29 3/4. November beans at $10.42, up 3 3/4. In January, $10.48 3/4, that finished 3 1/2 cents higher. The March at $10.55, up 2 3/4. In May, $10.59 1/2, up 1 3/4 cents. July futures $10.62 1/2 in the bean pit, up 1 1/4. November of next year at $10.48, up 2 1/4 cents. Bean meal at $4.33.30, up 19.50. Bean oil down 42 cents at $32.36. Live cattle futures in the October contract for the day, $147 even, up $1.45. October feeder cattle at $209.47, 87 1/2 cents higher. And the October lean hogs today finished 75 cents lower at $92.87 1/2. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Checking the outside markets at this hour, crude oil futures $93.56 a barrel, down 40 cents. The gasoline in the September $2.73 1/2, 1 2/10 cents lower. Ethanol futures at $2.17 2/10, up 2 1/10 cents. Natural gas for the day at $3.84 6/10 is down 4 3/10. By the way, the spread between the ethanol and the wholesale price of gasoline is now 56 6/10 cents wide. That's 2 4/10 cents narrower than it was yesterday. Diesel fuel at $2.83 a gallon, 7 1/10 cents lower on the afternoon. And the gold futures at $1,278.70, their settlement price for the day up $4.80. The U.S. dollar at 82.33. That's up 0.17. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Some showers, thunderstorms likely. They'll come before 3 in the afternoon, not too far away. Central time, mostly cloudy, the high of 87. A west-southwest wind at about 10 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation this afternoon set at 60%. Tonight, 30% chance of rainfall, mainly after 9 in the evening. Central time, a low of 72 degrees. And Saturday, again, a 30% chance of rainfall in the area, partly sunny and a high of 91. Saturday night, cloudy and 72. Sunday, sunny and 92. And Sunday night, partly cloudy and 72 degrees. On Monday, sunny skies, 92 degrees, partly cloudy on Monday night and 71. Chance of rainfall, but mostly sunny on Tuesday and a high of 90 degrees, and Tuesday night, partly cloudy and 70 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast at the bottom of the half hour. It is a Friday afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report for the 22nd day of August, 2014. On the phone line is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Good afternoon, Todd. Happy Friday to you, sir.
Happy Friday to you as well. Have you been getting rainfall the last 24 hours?
We have gotten a little bit, Todd, but I think most of it was well north of us where the ground needed it quite a bit more, with a northeastern Kansas and southwestern Iowa in southeastern Nebraska had missed some rains, and they look like they got some really nice rains and nothing like we saw in Indiana over the last 24 hours, rains that I think will really do some good for some pretty dry sections. It seemed this week's rainfall as a whole really hit some areas. Talking to clients near El Paso, near Bloomington, some of them had been missed a lot this past couple weeks. They'd actually gotten some nice rains, and were very, very relieved, as were the people in Indiana who did not get 6 to 10 inches but got more like 2 to 3 inches.
What does this tell you about the corn crop as it goes into the grain fill stage? It's in dough, and it's been in dough. Looks like it's been there for a longer amount of time. Now we're getting some heat, so it might jump to dent fairly quickly, I suppose. But
yeah.
What do you think about it for corn? And then conversely, August tends to be a month for soybeans, and I can't imagine that rainfall and a little heat can't be it. That's probably just what the soybean ordered.
I would think that, too. I think you're going to start to see that white mold and sudden death that clients are starting to talk about show up a lot more with that heat and the rains coming through. But I think you're right. The pods are there. The counts seem to be there. And the beans are inside the pods, and they aren't losing anything at this point for based upon most of the people I've talked with. But going back to the corn market, I think this is a beneficial type of rain for the fill and the kernel fill, and the shallow fears and concerns that producers had are going to be diminished. Did this really take the corn back up to the top end? No, I don't think so. And I think based upon Monday's dough and dent status, you would think that that would be accurate, that the top end yields are lost if they were lost a couple, 3 weeks ago. So I think this is where the pro farmer numbers resonate with the trade based upon the early conversations I've had and the early newswire reports and the chat boxes. That seems like a pretty fair number, that it was a little bit below 170. They squeezed down the harvested acres. If you keep the harvested acres up at USDA's number, you're still going to add about 100 to 150 million bushels to the production number, and you're going to come in right around the 2 billion bushel level. Trade, again, going after into the August report, I think was well over 2 billion and mentally was prepared for a 174 to 175 yield and would not have been surprised by that and been able to take the market lower probably on that.
You suppose the trade now believes USDA because the crop tour numbers have come in and they came in at a much lower level?
Yeah, I do, because I think that when I talk to both media people that were on the tour, media people that have been around a long time, and then also trader contacts in Chicago, that wow factor for the corn in the pro farmer tour was not there. In fact, it was the commentary that many of us heard was, wow, I'm surprised it isn't better than what I thought it would be, instead of, wow, this is really big. You know, it was almost the exact opposite of what I think the bearish traders were expecting. And quite frankly, I felt the same way, not being as bearish. So I thought, this is interesting. Even in Illinois, there's comments of being a little bit disappointed. And they really didn't even get into the top third or the bottom third of Illinois, where there's probably a lot more fields that have suffered.
Yeah, I was thinking when I saw the Illinois routes, and I knew the Illinois routes, that if they don't come out over 200, there's something wrong in the state.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
I mean,
and that's where some of the local elevators and co-ops have been doing. Sangamon County Farm Bureau numbers came out yesterday, and everything seemed to jive pretty nicely, that the Illinois yield is there. It may not be as huge as was once thought, but that makes sense given the lack of rainfall in some of these key areas.
Are you worried about the hook down? I think there's a hook down in the December contract for corn for the week. 371.5, down 5.25 on the week.
I'm not worried about it, but I'm kind of like last week, and I'm kind of in a time capsule with what we talked about last Friday afternoon, because I looked over my notes. And like last week, there was quite a bit of fundamental support, Todd,
right,
in this market again this week, and it was seen pretty handsomely. But again, like last week, technically it was pretty much a disappointing close, especially when it came to the wheat market, where it was looking at a technically weekly higher close in the December contract, and we gave all that back in the last 5 minutes of trade. And we did see, I think, continued repercussions from the November beans weighing on the corn market. And even though the September contract and the cash bean market is blasting off right now and really throwing back the idea that we have a 140 carryover in old crop beans, that new crop continued to disappoint. So I would like to see more connection with the cash market and beans and the new crop. And I think this goes back to the Delta crop being harvested, the trade thinking we're going to just barely have enough time to get through, and then we'll get the new crop out of the Delta. This makes the National Hurricane Service probably a very closely watched website next week, because we do have tropical disturbances off the Caribbean, and those paths are going to be really, really important. They get into the Gulf of Mexico, even if they're depressions, and we get a lot of rain next week, especially later part of the week. I think the trade will have to react to that.
Yeah, well, they'll react in the old crop because they're looking to move beans, and they won't be able to move it up and down the river system. Will they react in the new crop, though?
They are starting. At the end of this week, I started to see some basis really move. ADM Decatur, Illinois, also Claypool, and ADM Decatur, Indiana. All three of those look like they were pushing their better bids out there. Even the Andersons, when I looked at the website this afternoon for the cash beans, it looked like that the later delivery in September might be doing a little bit better. I didn't call to confirm that, but it does look like that at this stage of the game, you get into the first half of September, and they're going to be wanting those beans pretty badly. And I see that going into the later half of September if we have any issues whatsoever in the Delta.
All driven by the bean meal. Man, it had a good week.
Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing, I mean, I think we're really in historic times, and it's something I'll have to go back and look at when I get some time. But to see places like Claypool, Indiana, which is close to Lake Michigan, actually almost a dollar higher than the export market at the Gulf, and then to see those same, you know, crushers not even quoting meal at this point in time really is something that I have not seen very often in a 20-year career.
All right. Turn your attention to the cattle futures and what's been happening in the cattle market, but maybe we should back up to the 2 o'clock hour when USDA released cattle and feed numbers.
Yeah, and I think those two go hand in hand, so I'm glad you kind of set it up that way, because technically it looks like a bottom going into the weekly close when it came to the cattle. A nice bottom. We had a bottom and a hard bottom in the October hogs at 90.45 yesterday. So the livestock market looked really, really decent going into today's close. I'm a little bit nervous that those lows are going to hold, because the cattle on feed report today was pretty negative for feeders, as the average average number of placements was higher, and the average number for live cattle marketings was lighter by about 1.5% to 2% in each of those. And I thought maybe the cold storage market or the cold storage report would help, because the market had been thinking that the beef sector was gaining market share over the pork for the retail this past summer, but we actually added about 2.3% beef stocks month over month in today's report. So the key thing that I would press to producer clients that I work with in livestock, if this week's lows that we made can hold, that's a sign of true strength and probably a true bottom.
One final note, and I have been busy on this Friday, so I didn't keep up with it altogether, but did I see the Russians went across the border again?
Yes, this convoy that kind of went off the radar screen, they did come across at about 11 o'clock Central Time. It was reported by the news wires. Ukraine said, quote, a direct invasion, unquote, has occurred by Russia. So this is all right back on the table, as is the quality issue. We saw France import wheat, and they're the biggest producer and usually the biggest exporter in the European Union, but we saw them import wheat this week. So wheat is still very much the leader when it comes to the feed grains from my standpoint.
Always wonderful to talk to you on Friday afternoon. Thanks.
You too. You folks at Will Radio do a great job.
Hey, thank you. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are a couple of agricultural news items for the afternoon. A regulation setting the required volumes of ethanol and biodiesel that fuel refiners must use was sent to the White House Office of Management and Budget for review today. It is the final step before the rule mandate can be unveiled, and that's likely to happen probably in September. The Environmental Protection Agency late last year proposed a reduction in the volume of ethanol refiners must blend into gasoline for this calendar year, while keeping the mandate for biodiesel in diesel the same as the previous year. In announcing the White House review, the EPA did not say whether it changed the volumes from last year's proposal, but said it supports the program and wants to increase renewable fuel volumes. U.S. EPA says it received more than 340,000 comments on its proposal, and that it will issue the final rule after the White House and other federal agencies weigh in. Under the law that established the RFS, the EPA is supposed to finalize each year's volume in November of the prior year. This year has been the longest delay in the program's history. The White House is allowed to take up to 90 days for its review, but can easily extend the timeline if necessary. The rulemaking is now 9 months behind schedule. And one other item, the American Soybean Association is urging the European Union to take action on 9 biotech events with positive safety reviews awaiting import authorization. ASA was joined on the letters by 18 other farm, commodity, grain processing, grain trade, and biotechnology associations this week. In a letter to the United States Trade Representative Michael Froman, the groups encouraged the administration to contact the EU Commission President to ensure action on the pending events in September. Several of these products are already being commercialized and under stewardship programs in the U.S. and elsewhere, and the groups claim failure to approve them in September will increase the risk of trade disruptions during the coming months. Some of the products have been before the European Commission since the end of 2013 and were submitted more than 5 years ago. The group stated that the time required for EU decisions on new biotech crops has already lengthened in recent years, and no authorizations have been issued since November of last year. The letters emphasize that the delays could cause feed shortages and price increases, which would affect European producers, traders, livestock industry, and consumers. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Friday afternoon. Don't forget to stay with us if you can on our home radio station at WILL AM 580 for Commodity Week. That comes up immediately following this program. It appears on many of these radio stations tomorrow morning, or you can visit us online at willag.org after about 4 o'clock this afternoon to find Commodity Week. It's our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture. And this week, our special guest is Brian Grady. You heard him most of the week from the eastern leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Now up next, you know, statistical research done right here on this campus at the University of Illinois puts into view some interesting conclusions about the United States Department of Agriculture's crop production reports. I'll have more on how it is possible to see a big corn crop getting bigger when you look backwards through that data, but are not capable of predicting that when looking forward into the same set of numbers from the month of August. Researchers at Illinois wanted to know if the collective wisdom of those who buy and sell corn was, well, truly wise. Specifically, the adage that a big corn crop gets bigger, or on the flip side, that a small one gets smaller. So University of Illinois ag economist Scott Irwin and company delved into the USDA numbers and came to very contrasting conclusions.
The first is, if you're standing on January, looking back on the day that the final USDA estimate is released, you can indeed see that crops that turned out to be very large did grow in terms of the yield estimates from August through January. So that makes it seem like, yes, indeed, big crops get bigger. And also on the other side, small crops get smaller. But the interesting thing is that's actually a form of hindsight bias, because you're taking advantage of the fact that you already know the final crop size when you're looking backwards.
However, if you take exactly the same set of numbers and look forward from August and try to predict a big crop getting bigger or a small one getting smaller, it doesn't work, says Irwin.
And that answer statistically is an unequivocal no.
It seems a pretty strange conclusion.
When you get the August USDA yield, in statistical terms, we would say it's unbiased. It's likely to change going forward, but you really can't predict which direction and by how much. That's what we mean by unbiased. So your best assumption standing today is, on average, that's the best yield estimate that you can come up with, unless you really have a better model or a better system that you can prove with real-time or historical evidence is better than the USDA.
In the month of August, then, Scott Irwin says the USDA crop production figure for corn should be simply considered the best available and correct. Period. Interestingly, however, the same research shows the direction of the national average yield change from August to September does signal the likely direction of future changes in USDA forecast. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. It's a Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Normally, we would talk with Ben Pruess on this afternoon. Fridays, that is. He's at the Everly, Iowa facility that belongs to the Andersons. He's out of the office for a good reason, though I'm not quite sure. I believe he's out getting ready for a wedding, and my guess is his own. So that's good news for him. Congratulations to Ben Pruess. On the phone line with us to help us out this afternoon is Matt Bennett. And he is in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thank you for helping us out this afternoon. I do appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, did you see the numbers as they came out for the pro farmer figures, not the crop tour figures, but the pro farmer predictions at about 169.7,
four.
I think, or 169.4 nationwide for the corn crop and 45.4 for the beans, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was probably about a bushel above what I thought they'd come out with on corn, but I wasn't real surprised either because I do know that several of them had mentioned that they were pleasantly surprised with the crop in Minnesota. So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me, but at the same time, you know, I don't think I was too far off to begin with. So sub 170, but getting closer.
Yeah, so you still think there's a 170 or better crop out there nationally?
I don't know. It's a tough call. I think that there might be 170 out there yield-wise. I think total crop size, I'm not sure that I'm at 14, just simply because you know, I think we're going to lose some acres whenever it's all said and done. So, you know, I do think the yield is awfully good where we've corn. It's just a matter of where all do we have corn.
Oh, wait. So let me see then. On carry out, are you at 1.8 or below that?
I would say that 1.8 at the most. Right now. In fact, I think it's probably a little less. I think when USDA, you know, adjusts our exports a little bit lower, the only way I'm going to buy into that is if the dollar maybe is sideways to higher, gets stronger maybe. Otherwise, I think that our export market's going to stay fairly strong for us. And, you know, I think that our usage is going to be fairly good next year again. And I would say 1.8 would be the most I'd be at.
All right. Well, that's a better outlook than you've had for a while. Do you feel good about the marketplace, or better at least today than you have?
Oh, maybe a little bit better. You know, I think that when it all is said and done, I think it seems like the market's trying to get a little bit of traction. And, you know, I think we're throwing a lot of awfully big numbers at it here in the last several weeks. And maybe we're going to at least have a little bit of stability under us from a cash perspective.
It's National Pecan Torte Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1647, Dennis Pepin was born. He invented the pressure cooker. A safety valve of his own invention prevented explosions. Pepin also conceived of the use of steam to drive a piston in a cylinder, the basic design for early steam engines. In 1865, William Shepard of New York City received a patent for liquid soap. The proportions given were to dissolve 1 pound of common soap in water or steam and then add 100 pounds of ammonia such that the liquid thickens to the consistency of molasses. Shepard expected the product would be useful for both domestic and manufacturing purposes. In 1867, Charles Francis Jenkins was born, an inventor. He is best known as an early television pioneer, but he also invented the cone-shaped drinking cup. And in 1939, the first U.S. patent was issued for a disposable whipped cream aerosol container. Julius S. Kahn's patent was titled "An Apparatus Remixing a Liquid with a Gas" and was specifically concerned with making whipped cream using an ordinary soda bottle. And that's this day in agricultural history.
agricultural programming is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's check the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute.
It felt more like summer this week in Illinois. Average highs for the week range from 85 in the north to the low 90s in far southern Illinois. Lows have ranged from the 60s in the north to the low 70s in the south, reflecting the more humid conditions. We had widespread rains across the state. Rainfall amounts of 1 to 3 inches were common this week. The NOAA Climate Prediction Center released their outlooks for September and beyond. For Illinois, there is not too much to report. This fall, they show Illinois without any increased chance of being too wet or too dry, or being too hot or too cold. In other words, there is nothing in the forecast yet to indicate unusual temperature or precipitation patterns this fall. The same is true for winter temperatures, nothing unusual yet. However, they do show an increased risk for a drier than average winter. One reason for the uncertainty about this fall and winter is that there is only a 65% chance that El Nino will arrive, and if it does, it is expected to be moderate to weak. Therefore, the impacts on our fall and winter weather in Illinois are minimal at this time. Hot, humid weather is expected over the weekend and into next week with a chance of rain almost every day. Potential rainfall totals could be 1 to 2 inches in the northern half of the state and less than an inch elsewhere. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks to Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute for his update of the weather forecast. Now, here are the weekly changes from the CME Group in Chicago. Nearby September corn went to high this week at $3.70. It's low on the week at $3.56 and a quarter, with a settlement price down a quarter of a cent from the previous Friday at $3.65 and a half for the lead option September corn contract. December futures posted a hook down at $3.71 and a half. 5 1/4 cents lower. September beans this week, $11.70 and a half the high, the low at $10.99, settled at $11.66, up 63 1/4 cents. The November at $10.42, down a dime. Bean meal at $4.33.30, up $45. Bean oil, 51 cents lower at $32.36. Soft red winter wheat went to a high of $5.62 and a half, a low at $5.34 and a quarter. On the week, the trade up 0.75 cents Friday to Friday at $5.52 in the SEP. And July soft red winter wheat at $5.96 in Chicago, 7 1/4 cents lower. October live cattle at $147 even finished the week 75 cents lower than it did the previous Friday. October feeder cattle at $209.47 and a half, down $4.82 and a half on the week. And the October lean hogs this week, $92.87 and a half from Chicago at the CME Group, $2.07 and a half lower. You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media. It brings you agricultural programming. It's public radio for the farming world.